You're about to listen to a Second City Works presentation, brought to you in partnership with WGN Radio. Subscribe on your favorite podcast streaming platform or listen on WGNradio.com. And be sure to share.
The Second City is a world-famous comedy theater, and it got so famous because it has produced generation after generation of comedy superstars. That didn't happen by magic. Second City's improvisational pedagogy fuels great performance, and the same practices that have made stars of everyone from Bill Murray to Tina Fey can be applied for success offstage, at work, at home, and in the world. I'm Kelly Leonard, Vice President of Creative Strategy, Innovation, and Business Development at the Second City. This podcast is about collaborative conversations, discovering connections, and building a better future. This is Getting the Yes And.
Today's podcast is with Judith Enck, the founder and president of Beyond Plastics, a nationwide project based at Bennington College, whose goal is eliminating plastic pollution everywhere. In 2009, she was appointed by President Obama to serve as regional administrator at the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency and served as deputy secretary for the environment in the New York governor's office. She is currently a professor at Bennington College and has a new book written with Adam Mahoney titled The Problem with Plastic, How We Can Save Ourselves and Our Planet Before It's Too Late. Be forewarned, if your livelihood is based on plastic consumption or big oil and gas, you're not going to enjoy this conversation, but you need to hear it anyway. Judith, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Kelly. It's good to be with you and your listeners. And rest assured, Big Plastic is listening to this podcast.
Yeah, I'm sure they are. All right, let's start the conversation this way. When I started reading this book, I found myself popping into my coworkers' offices and reading various passages to them. This proved to be both annoying and useful to them. And I think both things can be true. The other thing that was during the holiday and right after the holiday, I threw out all the black plastic I could find in our kitchen.
Great.
And I replaced every plastic storage container we had been using for food, and we now only have glass containers.
My work is done. That is really good to hear. And the reaction from your coworkers is, you know, they're practically a member of the Enck family now, because my friends and family often say to me, enough with the plastic. What I remember is hiking with my family in beautiful wooded areas and pointing out, oh, look at that plastic on the ground. Look at that plastic bag in the tree. Look at this. And then it leads to enough, just enjoy the hike, which is good advice. But plastics is everywhere. You look up, you look down, you know, just in the natural environment. Again, over the Christmas holidays, we were hiking in a state park and we took a little shortcut through the parking lot. And right on the edges of the parking lot, I was so amazed at how many little tiny colorful pieces of plastic were on the ground. And I guess, you know, when they go through and clean the parking lot, you're not going to get these little tiny teeny pieces. And what comes to mind right away is that will be there for centuries. No one's going to pick it up. A bird might eat it. You know, a raccoon might eat it. But plastic lasts forever. So it can be daunting, but I really want people to internalize when you see plastic litter at the beach, in a park, on a city street, unless someone picks it up, it's going to be there for a really long time. And then if you do pick it up, and if it goes to a landfill, it'll last in the landfill for centuries. If you burn it, it'll pollute the air. So this is a pretty daunting but fixable problem. And you started by getting rid of your black plastic. I mean, I became aware of the problem with black plastics maybe just 5, 6, 7 years ago. I went into my own kitchen and I was surprised at how much black utensils we had. And the reason we want people not to use black plastic is because it's often made from recycled electronic waste, your old computer, your old cell phone. And when plastic gets hot, that is when you run into real problems. And I was using black spatulas until I learned about this, a little, you know, a little black plastic in your morning omelet, you know, day after day is a problem. So if you got black plastic, just toss it in the garbage, as painful as it is, and then work really hard to avoid black plastic for takeout food containers, which is difficult. But definitely don't store it. And I hope all your listeners know not to put plastic in the microwave.
Yeah. The other thing I did was I replaced our dog's plastic food and water dishes with metal.
Smart.
It's interesting. So I'm just thinking of this now. It's not in my notes. A couple of years ago, I interviewed an author, and basically he was proposing that the future is audio. And he was talking about, you know, how we're going to be able to open our closet door and it will tell us what kind of coat we need. And the reason it's audio is it's fastest. It is the most convenient because, you know, any other form of communication, there's a lag a bit. And the problem with plastics you talk about is this idea of convenience.
Yeah, but the alternatives can be equally convenient if they are made available to us. When you go to the supermarket, if you can buy something in metal or cardboard or glass, you should have that choice. The problem is the choice has been taken away from us. No one has voted for more plastic. Nothing tastes better in plastic, but because there's a glut in fracked gas, we have the dramatic increase in the use of plastic. The people who decided this for us are the fossil fuel and chemical companies, not policymakers, not voters, not consumers.
So let's talk some of the history, because I did not know about the group Keep America Beautiful, which formed in 1953. Who are those folks?
So they are mostly packaging companies, consumer brand companies who wanted to block any kind of progress in legislatures around the country. They were specifically formed to block one of the most successful laws on the books, which is known as bottle bills, refundable deposits on beverage containers. So you have an incentive to return them. It prevents litter. 10 states have bottle bills. It was the first bill I ever worked on as a college student. And they work very nicely. Well, Coke and Pepsi liked the status quo. They sell you their product and then they're done. There's nothing else they have to worry about. So Keep America Beautiful was formed by the very companies that were opposing the bottle bill. And they introduced the concept of, you know, it's our own personal responsibility to solve this gargantuan problem. And yeah, people should not litter. That's a given. But what they don't like to see is new laws or new policies that affect systemic change. And that's exactly what we need. You know, they spent a lot of money running TV ads. Older folks might recall the crying Indian.
And that
was actually an Italian actor. And the message is the problem with pollution is caused by you and I. No mention of Coke, Pepsi, McDonald's, Exxon, Dow, DuPont. But they have a role to play in not only solving the problem, but, you know, doing less to make the problem so severe with their own products.
I mean, did they hire psychologists? This feels so evil and smart to call yourself Keep America Beautiful, first of all, because like you're doing the opposite. The crying Indian ad, which was iconic. I mean, if you talk about the most important advertising of the last 50 years, that is in there, if not top 10, right? And so they were playing a long game that they seemingly are still winning.
Yeah, I think you're right. You know, it was interesting. I was in Washington, D.C. Earlier this week being interviewed about the book at the bookstore Politics and Prose. And it was a packed crowd, which was so nice to see on a dark and stormy Wednesday night. And someone in the audience spoke up, and he essentially did a confessional to the group at the book reading, saying that he used to work for one of the largest PR firms in the world and worked with Fortune 500 companies to basically figure out how to block plastic bag bans. Mm. And I mentioned some of the policies that I work on around the country. And he admitted, oh yeah, we worked on this, we worked on that. So this is big money going up against common sense. And it's not just like the obvious PR strategies, but I think they do, work with people who are expert at consumer choices and psychology and music. I mean, last year or the year before, they enlisted Bill Nye the Science Guy to promote plastic, which was really heartbreaking. Yeah.
Oh, I can't believe he did that. Okay. We talked about this before. So I read this book and I can't unsee plastic. And it's everywhere. So it's in my own house, it's at work, but it's also on the street when I'm walking around. But here's the thing I don't see, because I live in Chicago. I don't see what people in Appalachia and the Gulf Coast see. And 90% of America doesn't see that? 80% of America, which is a big
Probably even more. Even if you live in those states, you don't see
that,
where the plastic is being produced.
So what if I'm there, what am I seeing?
Well, I've been there many times. I don't live there, but we have friends and allies who do. You see a concentration of petrochemicals facilities, some of them making plastic in a very small geographic area. Your listeners should check out Cancer Alley. It's an 85-mile stretch between Baton Rouge and New Orleans, where there are many plastic production facilities right next to where people live. And these are called fence line communities because your backyard fence goes right up to your neighbor who could be an oil refinery or chemical production plant, a plastics plant. And what is really heartbreaking is in Cancer Alley, the cancer rate, according to a recent study by Johns Hopkins, is 7 times the national average. And people are getting really sick, not just with cancer, but with respiratory disease, with heart disease. A lot of this is connected to their exposure in the soil, the air, the water that they drink. And this is repeated in Texas. If you ever have occasion to be in Houston, add another half day to your trip and go to Port Arthur, Texas. It's about 90 minutes west of Houston. It is stunning to see this heavy concentration of petrochemical plants right next to where people live. Similar situations in Appalachia, although I would say not as extreme as Cancer Alley in Texas. And so, these are our brothers and sisters who are breathing in carcinogens, neurotoxins, in order for us to live in a throwaway society. Now, what we can do as residents outside of those areas is not only use less plastic in our personal life, but work for new laws to reduce the use of plastic. For instance, New York State, New Jersey have banned plastic bags. That's literally tens of millions of plastic bags that are not used in those states, hopefully replaced with reusable bags most of the time. So when we reduce demand, we are helping, even in a very modest way, protect the health of people living in Cancer Alley in Texas and Appalachia.
So, and it's not just health that's going on here. You talk about the fact that some of these plants are based on where plantations used
yes.
to be.
Yes. Yeah, this is fascinating.
Yeah.
Check out the work of a group called the Descendants Project in Louisiana. And they have mapped plantations becoming plants, meaning petrochemical plants, They do amazing work in southern Louisiana, and worth a trip, or at least go to their website of the Descendants Project.
All right, so you're hurting poor people, you're hurting Black people. There's a role that women play here, which also I think was interesting. So it's all wrapped up in this a ball that seems to speak to the human condition as we exist right now, but around something that's a very clear problem that I felt like we were taking action on as I got older, and suddenly recycling became a thing, which was not a thing when I was younger. What about recycling?
Yeah, well, I love your lead up to this question, because this really is about environmental justice and inequality. The plastics industry knew a few decades ago that people were having concerns in the 70s and the 80s. In the book, The Problem with Plastic, we talk about the early efforts on Long Island in Suffolk County, and this heroic county legislator now, also a county legislator again, Steve Englebright, trying to ban polystyrene foam and deal with plastic bags. So the companies that make plastic knew something was up. And so they decided to spend a massive amount of advertising dollars convincing us that don't worry about all the single-use plastic you use, just toss it in your recycling bin. Sure. But people did that because most people want to be good stewards of our environment. We all have kids or grandchildren or, you know, wonderful nieces and nephews. We want to leave a better condition of the earth for them. So people started doing what I call wish cycling, putting plastics in the recycling bin that never get recycled. And I want to just spend a minute on this, if I could, explaining why. I support recycling. Keep recycling your paper, cardboard, metal, glass. I started my town's recycling program as a volunteer 38 years ago. I know the year because I did it when I was on maternity leave. So keep recycling those materials. Compost your yard waste and food waste if you can. But we have to be honest about the failure of plastic recycling. It's only a 5 to 6% recycling rate after all these years. Plastics are not designed to be recycled. So here's the problem. If you have an aluminum can, you can recycle that into a new aluminum can. An old Chicago Tribune can be recycled into writing paper or a cardboard box. Plastics are just too heterogeneous. 16,000 different chemicals used to make plastic, many different colors, and different types of plastic called polymers. So if you think of your own home or apartment, you might have a bright orange detergent bottle near your washing machine. Your kitchen might have a plastic bread bag. And then you might have a black plastic takeout food container in your refrigerator. Those plastics cannot be recycled together. Too many different types of plastics, different color, different chemical concoctions. Now, the people who knew that and knew that if you really wanted to succeed at plastics recycling, you literally would need thousands of sorts. Like that one bread bag would be recycled different from the detergent bottle. The only plastic recycling success story is plastic soda bottles and bottled water in states that have bottle bills or mandatory deposits, because that's one type of plastic, PET plastic, that is kept source separated from everything else. But if you don't separate it at the outset, you're not going to be able to recycle it. So that's why plastic recycling has never worked. I had an article in The Atlantic with a headline, kind of a screeching headline, plastics recycling has never worked and it never will. I got very little pushback on that. And that was before The Atlantic was so cool. But so hopefully two or three people read the article. But very little pushback because the industry knows this is true. It is so serious that Attorney General of California, Rob Bonta, sued ExxonMobil in September of 2024 for deceptive claims about plastics recycling. And that lawsuit is going through the court system. Exxon, of course, tried to get it dismissed. The judge didn't agree with that. Now they're trying to get it out of state court into federal court. And the Attorney General of California, Rob Bonta, I predict is going to win that case because it's all about math. So that was the myth that to this day, many people believe, just keep tossing your plastic into the recycling bin. And unless it's marked on the bottom as number one or number two, the plastic will go to your recycling center, but it gets picked off the conveyor belt lines and is set aside to go to a landfill or a garbage incinerator.
So I've worked with enough behavioral scientists that I know that this is a big problem with choice and with all these other, you know, system one, system two thinking, you name it, in terms of how human beings, you know, operate in the world. One of my favorite lines from the book is actually not your line. You're quoting Anne-Marie Bonneau, if I'm
yes,
correctly.
Yes, I love that.
Mm-hmm. She says, we don't need a handful of people doing zero waste perfectly. We need millions of people doing it imperfectly.
She's brilliant. She's right. And also, people have guilt about using so much plastic. And, you know, some people are surprised when I say, don't feel guilty about it. You often don't have a choice, you know, and we're not going to, you can't shop your way out of this giant problem. People should try to reduce their use of plastic for their own health benefit. And let me explain that for a moment. But we really need new laws. So just like we have fuel efficiency standards for cars, we need environmental standards for packaging and the use of plastic. We're never going to get rid of all plastic. And there are some uses that make sense. For instance, you know, your car bumper is probably plastic and it makes the car more fuel efficient. Wind turbines have plastic in them. What I'm concerned about is the pointless plastic. And that's most plastic that's being used today. So the reason why you should get rid of plastic in your own life is not just because you're altruistic and you're a supporter of Beyond Plastics, which I hope you will be, beyondplastics.org. It's also because just in the last few years, scientists have identified the presence of little tiny bits of plastic in different parts of our bodies. They're called microplastics, if they're 5 millimeters or less. And in the last few years, scientists and doctors have found microplastics in our blood, our lungs, our kidneys, in the human placenta, both the fetal side and the maternal side. So that means our children are being born pre-polluted. Microplastics have been found in breast milk, in testicles. And then the plastics companies started saying, well, yeah, there may be microplastics in your body, but there's no proof of harm. So, you know, you do excrete some plastic, but let me go out on a limb and say the presence of microplastics in your body is not helping you in any way. And unfortunately, I mentioned the 16,000 chemicals used in plastics, they hitchhike on the microplastics. So you don't just have kind of the physicality of it, like having microplastics in your gut. You also have an exposure to some of the toxic chemicals used to make plastic. And in response to the plastics industry saying no evidence that it's causing harm, we now have the evidence. Recent studies in peer-reviewed journals, including places like New England Journal of Medicine. Mm-hmm. That's the one I meant. They had a study documenting the presence of microplastics in heart arteries. The microplastics attach to plaque. And when that happens, you have a really significantly increased risk of heart attack, stroke, or premature death. And then another study showing harm is a recent study that documented microplastics crossing our blood-brain barrier and contributing to Alzheimer's disease and neurological disease. We need more studies for sure. You know, one or two studies doesn't necessarily prove the point, but it shows that there is a concern and there is a problem. And I firmly believe that in 5, 6, 7 years, when I'm still doing this work, we're going to have many people in government in important positions in the business community saying, oh my God, why didn't we act sooner? You know, I think there's enough evidence to act. And it's somewhat similar to smoking, you know, and people have said to me, well, people voluntarily smoked. Well, the secondhand smoke is why we got smoking restrictions. It was waiters and waitresses and stewards in airplanes who are constantly exposed to the secondhand smoke. That's what got us the Clean Indoor Air Act. And on plastics, you know, we are involuntarily being exposed to microplastics. We breathe the, people ask, how do you get microplastics in your body? You breathe it in through your nose or you swallow it. So for instance, if you've got a plastic water bottle and you turn that cap a couple times, little tiny pieces of plastic may fall into your beverage because of the abrasion of the cap. You would think the companies selling us this stuff would have figured this out before they put it on the market, but they don't. So we need to take steps to protect our own health, particularly if you are in a family thinking of getting pregnant, or if you are pregnant, or if you have small children, you want to be very, very vigilant about reducing your use of plastic, particularly for food packaging.
I'm reminded of that phrase or the adage, the best time to plant a tree was 20 years ago. The second best time is today.
Yes.
So this is an unusual podcast. You're an unusual podcast guest for this podcast. This podcast was, I wrote a book 10 years ago called Yes And, about how Second City takes its improv principles, these theatrical concepts, applies them to areas of creativity and teamwork and all that. And it's fine. Like I did this because I was interested in the topic and not looking to shoehorn improv in, but I'm going to, because we're talking and I'm like, oh no, an improv mindset would help us with this problem. And I wrote down three adages from my world, and I want to get your feedback. The first is, in improv, we teach people to bring a brick, not a cathedral.
Mm.
So when you're going to build and make something out of nothing with other people, if you bring a cathedral, it's too much, no cathedrals, just your brick. And everyone brings a brick, you do this together. That's one. The next one is, we have to learn to play the scene we're in, not the scene we want to be in. So you accept the reality that we're in right now, and that's what you work with, because if you're worrying about before, you're worrying about after, we can't tackle this thing that's in front of us. And the third is that all of us are better than one of us. We do this together. We collectively do this together. That's always the case. And this individualism, which we've romanticized so crazily in our society, is not true. We need all of us. Like, you're on a road that someone else built.
Yes, beautiful. Well, did you follow the recent election of Zoran Mamdani in New York City? You probably heard of him by now. Yeah. He's something. So, and a co-sponsor of our big packaging reduction bill when he was a New York State Assembly member. During his inauguration speech, he talked about rugged individualism versus collective action. And I couldn't even begin to remember, but everyone should Google his inauguration speech. And he makes that point about working together. And quite honestly, that's why I formed my organization, Beyond Plastics, after I left the Obama administration. Was one person, look, on one hand, can one person make a difference? Sure. But you need other people. And you need to have a multiplier effect. So we now have 19 staff, which is, you know, wonderful going from 1 to 19, but utterly ridiculous when you're taking on the fossil fuel and chemical industry. What can 19 people do, even though they're working night and day? So working together, working at the grassroots level. And on your second point, I rarely write down wisdom from these podcasts, but I wrote all three down because they sound like kind of our theory of change at Beyond Plastics. Mm-hmm. Your second point of playing the scene that you're in and not the scene you want to be in is relevant, because no one in their right mind would take on the plastics industry.
No.
They are so powerful and influential. Yes. So when you work on plastics, you need to both be very politically strategic and suspend political reality at the same time, if that makes any sense at all.
Totally does.
Yeah, because, you know, I work with wonderful people who say, Judith, why don't you just get a bill introduced in Congress to ban plastic? And so the code with me is when someone says something like that, I say, that's an idea. And then I move on to the next thing. We're not going to ban plastic, sadly, anytime soon. But we are going to take concrete steps to reduce the production, use, and disposal of plastic. So we are focused very much on single-use plastic packaging because it's 40% of plastic use and what our bodies is coming in contact with the most. You know, the candy wrapper, the McDonald's fast food packaging, the plastic water bottle when you often can just get water from your tap for free. So we are pretty strategic on what we take on. And then more than anything, on your first point of bringing a brick rather than a cathedral, is we've started a program called Local Groups and Affiliates, because people would call up and say, you know, what can we do? So we want to give people ideas, and people do what they want to do, especially it's volunteers. So, you know, some people want to host a film screening. Other people want to educate in the schools and then get their schools to stop using so much plastic. Some people want to go right into the political arena and work at their city council level on a policy or to reduce plastic. So it's the bricks that build the cathedral eventually, but you have to start with the bricks, as you have so beautifully pointed out.
Yeah, and you know, this podcast, you know, at its lowest amount, 50,000 people will listen. It could be 500,000. We've had that. We've had 1 million actually for certain podcasts. So, you know, that conversation, I wouldn't have known to have the conversation. Of course, I watched The Graduate. I mean.
Yes.
You know, which is an immediate thing that people of a certain age go to, which is The Secret is Plastic. So I knew and wasn't necessarily surprised about most of this. So let's be solutions oriented to sort of finish this out before I ask you for a yes and story. Chapter 9 is basically this list of what you can do. So the first one is stop buying plastic bags.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I'm trying to figure out. I get this in terms of bringing my tote to the Jewel or whatever my local supermarket is. What am I doing for like my garbage? What are my alternatives in terms of this? What's the list?
Yeah, so garbage bags are hard. Most communities require that. But if you're good at waste reduction, you're probably only using one or two garbage bags a week, as opposed to if you go to the supermarket, you may be handed 10, 12, 13 plastic bags. So let's start with your retail use of plastic. You just want to remember to bring reusable bags with you. And, you know, there are now these bags, they're called one company, I'm not endorsing companies, but one is called a Chico bag, C-H-I-C-O, mm-hmm. and it collapses into a little ball. And so you just throw it into your purse or your knapsack. And if you drive, you will get in the habit of just leaving your reusable bags in your car. So they're right there. There's actually a very good Portlandia episode about Fred Armisen forgetting his plastic bag. That's my favorite TV show because it makes fun of people like me. I won't play the whole scene with you, but you know, it's just a matter of we all wear seatbelts now. We didn't do that till it was the law. No one smoked cigarettes in the restaurant because it's the law. So pass a plastic bag ban. Bring your own reusable bags. And what I've done now is also I bring this little stainless steel bento box thing called a tiffin, T-I-F-F-I-N, very commonly used throughout India. And when I'm out at a restaurant, I always have a little leftover. And for years, I would embarrass my two sisters. I would always bring a Pyrex with me and scrape my leftovers in, and they would look away. One would go to the restroom. Now we're in the restaurant. I'm like, oh, look at that table. They're doing it. So you just have to remember to bring the container with you. So it's just What I urge people to do is think about what's your heaviest use of plastic. I had a friend years ago who said he's just never going to get a single-use coffee cup. He's always going to remember his reusable coffee mug. If he doesn't, he just won't get coffee. So, like, think of little things that you do a lot. I carry in my purse a little set of bamboo utensils, a fork, a spoon. I don't remember the last time I used a plastic utensil. I just, you know, go into the bottom of my purse, which is like the Bermuda Triangle, and the bamboo utensils come in a nice little package, a cloth package, so they don't get dirty at the bottom of your knapsack or your purse. So, you know, there are these little steps that just become second nature.
Yeah, my wife started using these sort of cloth bags for the veggies.
Yeah,
which is something that was like, oh no, it's easy, it's great, and also for fruit, and other things. And I actually found some because of our dog, I found some poop bags that were not plastic or seemingly right. I mean, you also have to double check that because you talk about greenwashing, right? There are companies out there saying these things are eco-friendly, and they might not be.
Right. Or you can like save bread bags for your dog's poop or frozen food bags. I mean, there's a lot of like look into your garbage bin and see all the stuff you're throwing out that you might be able to use and not even have to buy those things.
Okay. I love that we're sort of ending on poop bags.
Yeah.
All right. So we're not going to end on poop bags because we always end the podcast asking our guests for a yes and story. I think there's a lot that of the yes and philosophy that fits our conversation, but I'm wondering if a story comes to your mind.
Well, it's kind of the story of my life. I mean, starting Beyond Plastics, you know, I was working at EPA as a political appointee by President Obama, which I was so honored and proud to serve him. Remember, no drama, Obama. When you're appointed to your job by the president, you know when your last day is.
Right.
It's when he leaves office or she leaves office sometime in the future. And so I had a lot of time to think about what to do next. And I've spent, you know, my entire career working both inside and outside government on environmental protection. And a lot of my friends are retiring and taking care of grandkids, et cetera. So one might argue that I should downshift a little bit. You know, I was approached by Bennington College to teach there, which I'm still doing. But instead, you know, I also talked to people about the plastic problem and should we start a new group to work on plastics? So I made the rounds and talked to other groups and foundations to see if I could avoid starting a new group, but said yes to starting Beyond Plastics. Because, you know, who wants to get paid a lot and have weekends off? That's so overrated. So I am working really hard every day to build Beyond Plastics. And more than that, you know, it's just one organization, but to build a movement from the bottom up to reduce the production, use, and disposal of plastics. So I'm really happy that I said yes to that. I don't know if that's the sort of answer you're looking for.
Absolutely.
But yeah, and now it's, you know, it's very demanding, but it's also fun. You know, your other point about working together as a group of people is you meet some extraordinary people. I mean, the women that we profile in the book, Diane Wilson and Debbie Lee Cohen and Sharon Levine. I mean, if I just, you know, had a normal middle-class life, I never would have met these environmental champions. And, you know, that's been the real blessing in my life over the last 40 years is the people who I've met who do so much more than I do and put so much on the line working to protect their communities and their health from pollution. I mean, it's the greatest honor of my life. I mean, I loved meeting Obama, but I'm actually more over the moon meeting the Sharon Levines and the Diane Wilsons of the world. These are people who, up against extraordinary odds, are standing up to big corporations and getting things done.
Yeah, it's really inspirational. It's not a drag. Everyone should read the book. It's called The Problem with Plastic, How We Can Save Ourselves and Our Planet Before It's Too Late. Judith Eng, thank you for coming on the podcast.
Thank you, Kelly.
Getting DS And is produced by Second City Works and WGN Radio. Our editor is Iridian Fierro from WGN. We get support at the Second City from Emma Smith and Colleen Fahey. For more information about the Second City, you can go to www.secondcity.com, or you can email us directly at works@secondcity.com.